Our next presentation is by Greg Johnson, who is the curator of the Blues Archive in the Department of Archives and Special Collections at the University of Mississippi in Oxford. He has held this position since fall of 2002. And before that, he was a student at the University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg, from where he has a Bachelor of Music in History and Literature and a Master of Library and Information Science. And in addition, though his work involves blues, he's written a thesis on the Estonian composer Arvo Pärt, who's a favorite of mine, incidentally. And he performs traditional Irish music with his wife. So let's welcome Greg Johnson.
Try to speak out so I can drown out the sounds next door. And excuse me, my allergies have been acting up today. Really, before I get started speaking about the Sheldon Harris Collection, I just want to give just a brief overview of the Blues Archive and what we do. I guess this year, the Blues Archive came of age, so to speak. It's 21 years now of being officially open to the public. It began when B.B. King donated his personal record collection to the archive in the early 80s. And that's an interesting collection in and of itself. There's a lot of blues in it, obviously, but there's a whole lot of jazz. And there's about 60 foreign language courses, how to speak Yiddish, how to speak Ukrainian. All that. He wanted to learn how to say thank you whenever he went on his first world tour in the native languages of the countries he was in. We have the Trumpet Records collection, the label that Lillian McMurray ran out of Jackson, Mississippi in the 50s. And if you heard the earlier talk on Pass the Biscuits, Pappy, we also have in that the Trumpet Records collection is the first contract of Sonny Boy Williamson II. And there's a lot of, also we have the Ivy Gladden photos out of Helena, Arkansas, where the King Biscuit Time, the King Biscuit Radio Hour show, a lot of those photos, Sonny Boy Williamson, Robert Jr. Lockwood, and others. All right, let me get into the main focus of the topic. This past fall, the Blues Archive at the University of Mississippi received a substantial collection of audio recordings, books, research files, sheet music, photographs, and more. This really increased the current holdings of the archive by almost around a sixth, very large collection. And this collection was the gift of music collector and author Sheldon Harris. You can see in the photo here. And since this is such a new collection, we can consider this sort of a sneak peek into it. I'm still opening boxes. It's Christmas every day, basically, for me, opening boxes, getting things processed. So I'm going to present on what I know so far about the collection. And let me start first by speaking about Sheldon Harris, the man. He was born in Cleveland, Ohio, but moved to Brooklyn, New York at the age of 9, where he's lived ever since. I say ever since. Actually, past year he's been living with his daughter down in New Jersey. And I should say this up front to clear up any misconceptions. Sheldon Harris is still alive, but he's actually suffering from the advanced stages of Alzheimer's. It's a very unfortunate situation. He began collecting records in the late 30s as a teenager, collecting things like the Andrews Sisters, Bing Crosby, and others. He has no formal music education. He actually worked for an advertising agency. He was an accountant there. In the 1940s, he began attending many lectures of jazz and blues history at New York University and the New School for Social Research. Many of these lectures were headed up by Dr. Marshall Stearns of New York's Institute of Jazz Studies. Sheldon befriended him, and in 1954, Sheldon actually became the first curator of the Institute of Jazz Studies. And he served that in that position until it transferred to Rutgers in 1966. From 1963 to 71, Sheldon was the blues editor for Jazz and Pop magazine. He also worked for Record Research magazine. He contributed jazz and blues articles to a number of magazines and newspapers, including the Saturday Evening Post, Current Biography, Downbeat, Living Blues, Jazz Journal, the UK Journal, Blues Forum out of Germany, among others. Sheldon was a member of the Record Research Associates of New York, the International Association of Jazz Record Collectors, and the New York Sheet Music Society. Sheldon Harris has given many lectures on blues and jazz. He has spoken at Rutgers, Alfred University, Brooklyn College, Queens, Seton Hall University, and others. He's appeared on many radio programs, including the Larry King Show, All Things Considered, many more. In 1979, his research into the blues, over really a 20-year period at that point, in-depth research into the, specifically the blues, resulted in the book Blues Who's Who. At 775 pages, it was really the first in-depth biographical blues dictionary of blues musicians. In 1981, Blues Who's Who won a W.C. Handy Award for the Outstanding Blues Book of the Year. In 1983, Sheldon Harris received an honor in the Blues Hall of Fame in the Classics of Blues Literature category. Anyone that's done probably blues research has used this book, I'm sure. A lot of very fact-based book. In 1986, Harris's interviews with jazz trombonist and blues singer Clyde Bernhardt resulted in the book I Remember, 80 Years of Black Entertainment, Big Bands, and the Blues. It's really a history of blues, or really a history of jazz, I should say, as told from Clyde Bernhardt's perspective. Okay, let's get into the collection now. Let's see. It's actually Sheldon in one of his music rooms. I actually went up to Brooklyn this past fall and oversaw the packing of all the materials. Interestingly enough, from the move from Brooklyn all the way down to Oxford, Mississippi, I've only found one broken 78, which I was sweating. It was a Peggy Lee, I think. I was floored. I couldn't help myself. I was sweating bullets, waiting for the movers to get down, but. I've been shocked. They did an excellent job. It was Hallett Movers, incidentally. So if you need some guys to do your moving, I recommend them. Okay, let me discuss some of the non-audio collections in the Sheldon Harris collection first. Let's see. There are almost 4,000 books and magazines on jazz and blues in this collection. Many of them are long out of print and or signed by the authors. Of particular interest are the many minstrel books from the 1880s through the beginning of the 20th century. These include joke books, song books, and others often found in minstrel shows. And there are oftentimes many detailed chapters, you know, on how to put, if you've ever read any of these, how to put on blackface, you know, very offensive stuff. There's also 7 minstrel posters in this collection from the 1880s through the 1920s. It's the Haverly's Genuine Colored Minstrels. They were billed as the Georgia Slave Troupe of 100 performers. This particular poster dates from March 8th, 1889. These are in very good condition. There's H.B. Anderson's Georgia Smart Set Minstrels. They were billed as the funniest show on earth. J.W. Johnson's Old Reliable Virginia Minstrels and more. Excuse me. We have Sheldon's research files in this collection. Most of these were his files compiled while he was writing Blues Who's Who. The book was actually intended to be much larger than the 775 pages that Arlington Press first put out. And the research files bear this out. He was quite meticulous in trying to get his facts straight. So to this end, there's a number of, we have over 100 copies of, you know, certified death certificates, things of that nature. He would write off trying to verify dates. There are over 300 photographs in this collection as well. Many of these are of the early classic blues singers. There are also over 700 pieces of sheet music in the collection. And the bulk of this sheet music is between the years 1880 and 1920, though it does date all the way back as far as 1834 with a copy of Zip Coon. And it goes through the early 1950s. There are jazz, blues, and ragtime pieces in this as well, but a great deal of this collection is of minstrel and coon songs. Some of the less PC titles, well, let me see, I've got some, let me just fast forward, we'll look at some of these. There's a number of photos in here. That's Sheldon with Muddy. Sheldon with little brother Montgomery and Edith Wilson, with Jimmy Rushing. And these are, I just scanned these out of, I'm not going to click on the sound file, it doesn't work. So. Just showing a number of the signatures, there's tons of signatures and autographs in the in his copy of Blues Who's Who. Thought this one was funny. To Mr. Sheldon Harris, jazz, blues, and no disco. All right, here's some of the minstrel books. This is from 1891. Let me scroll down. Yeah, you often see these stock characters in a lot of the minstrel shows. There's Mr. Tambo and there's the guy playing the bones. You often see them on opposite ends of a minstrel group, five or six players. Anyone interested in racial stereotypes, 19th century, early 20th century, it's a great collection. It's a minstrel show put on by the St. John the Evangelist Episcopal Church in 51. But looking at the program, this one was not nearly as offensive as earlier minstrel shows. It's a chapter in the Widmark Minstrel Guide from 1899 on how to black up. Here's these photos. You see that Mr. Bones on one end and Mr. Tambo on the other end. Here's that that early copy of Zip Coon I was talking about, and this character Zip Coon is a sort of character you often find in the minstrel shows, a stock character. It's really meant to portray an African American living above his set position in society. Yeah, some of the offensive tunes. This, incidentally, Ernest Hogan was African American. This was a very popular tune. Let's see. Yeah, we have several of these. These Christie's melodies that were published as sheet music. I'm sorry. Oh yeah, that. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's true. We'll just look through some of these quickly. Incidentally, I've been digitizing this sheet music collection, and this will be the first collection that I'm looking at to actually put on the web, because all of this, it's early on, and I'm not worried about copyright. Most of it's prior to 1923, so if they want to come get me on this, let them come. Now, here's what I'm doing. I'm scanning all the photos, the covers, at 600 dpi, and saving that. I already have over 50 gigabytes of sheet music covers, filling up quickly. when you're scanning at 600 dpi. But the actual sheet music itself, I'm doing as grayscale PDFs, and this will all look toward the end of this year. Is my set date. I'm trying to get this done by the end of the year. Or sometime at the first of the coming year. And when I find copies of the actual music, I'm going to have links to those embedded as well. And I've been throwing around the idea of possibly, I mean, this might be a little cheesy, but actually playing in a lot of the piano parts, having like a MIDI file along with it. I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a Gilbert and Sullivan archive online that you can listen to the Mikado or whatever, and it's like karaoke. They have the entire thing in MIDI, all of it. You can deal with the cheesy MIDI sounds. But so many of these, yeah. You can see the description there at the bottom. And various forms of that term pop up. Yeah, here's another fairly popular one, very offensive. And here's the part of the chorus. Someone had to pick the cotton, someone had to plant the corn, someone had to slave and be able to sing. That's why darkies were born. What a lovely piece. Huh? Yeah, talk about the going back. People complain about the lyrics of music these days. Let's go back to the good old days. Well, all right. Let's see. What else do we have? Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of Lou Dockstader in here. You can see there's many plays on the word coon, a disturbance in Coontown. Actually, there's a town right outside, a very small community outside Oxford, Mississippi, and it's still called Coontown Landing is the name of it. So, you see all the blackface. Well, here's two white guys in blackface, and one of them is in drag. So. There's so many tunes in here, songs dealing with, you know, just stereotypes, you know, this idea of African Americans in Watermelon. I mean, it just pops up so often in this music. This one, if you can see the little insert, I mean, it's very, you know, you see this all the time, very offensive drawings. The smile, I mean. Okay, let's see. All right, let's get into the audio collections. In terms of numbers, the Sheldon Harris audio collection can really be broken down as follows. There's around 4,000 LPs, 7,078s, 545s, there's 225 cassettes, and 415 open reel audio tapes. most of the, you know, the LPs, 45s, and 78s, these are all commercial recordings of blues and jazz. Sheldon was very fond of early female and jazz and blues singers, especially the classic blues era. There are many recordings of all the classic, you know, blues Smiths, the Bessies, the Claras, Trixie, Mamie, all of those. There, he has, you know, the standard fare from, you know, Ida Cox, Victoria Spivey, Lucille Bogan, Lucille Hegeman, Alberta Hunter, Sarah Martin, Sippy Wallace, Edith Wilson, Ma Rainey, you know. He has a number of jazz records from their contemporary jazz men, Louis Armstrong, Clarence Williams, others. There's quite a few blues 78s by, you know, people like Walter Davis, Leroy Carr and Scrapper Blackwell, Lonnie Johnson, Bumblebee Slim, Pinewood Tom, or Josh White, actually, Tampa Red, Smokehouse Charlie, Blind Blake, Sleepy John Estes, Papa Charlie Jackson, and others. I'm still unpacking these as I speak. Like I say, it's, you know, it's a birthday present every day. I did look through. I didn't see any Robert Johnsons or Charlie Pattons in this. We do have several of those that are part of the Gail Dean Wardlow collection that we got from him years back. Many of the tapes in this collection are simply actually the open reel audio tapes were listenable copies that he transferred, made copies of all the 78s that he could listen to himself without having to play his 78s. But there are a lot of interviews that he conducted with various musicians such as, you know, Helen Humes, Eva Taylor, Otis Spann, Jimmy Rushing, John Lee Hooker, B.B. King, Harmonica Slim, Clyde Bernhardt, and many others. I'm in the process of trying to get these digitized, get some digital preservation copies at least, and I'm trying to get some grant money to pay for making a tape backup as well. These are everything that I am, even spoken word. It may be overkill to some, but everything I'm doing at 96K 24-bit. Because I see standards are just going to get out, and we can always cut that out whenever you're making when you're getting it to a listenable copy. Let's see. Many of the interviews in this collection, Sheldon actually transcribed himself, but the ones that he has not, I plan to be doing those in the future. Everything I have right now that I've digitizing, I have backed up on. You know, Mitsui Gold CDRs. We have removable hard drives. We have a server, and our IT department on campus actually allows us to take hard drives and store them off-site there. So I have a separate hard drive and CD files stored outside the archive in our IT department. Let me just scroll through these. I just pulled out a few records from the collection. Scan them. They vary. Most of them are pretty good, actually. There's some fair ones, obviously. Some are crap, but you know, most of them are actually, I would say, good or better. I'm sorry? Oh, better than placeholders. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I should have enlarged these a little bit. Yeah, I just put a few in, just a sampling. These are, there's some neat stuff in here. These got a lot of Butterbeans and Susie. Some Blind Blake. That's not good. Yeah, not good. Yeah, most are good. I was surprised.
And using stories, it's interesting to see these records that you've got here. Mm-hmm. Sheldon called me years ago saying that he wanted to sell his collection, and I went to visit him. All I saw was a big band, popular music, just junk.
Yeah, he was showing you his other collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's good to see he actually did have some
Right. Yeah, he probably took you to his not his main music room. Yeah, he had a couple of music. Yep, these were not in the basement. These are all yeah. Sorry, you got scammed. Yeah, to be honest, there was actually a lot of a lot of others that we did not take. There was quite a few just popular LPs. Yeah. And you know, we have limited space and moving costs and all of that. But we took. Yeah. I got the goods. Oh yeah. There were several of them. Yeah, I just threw this Elmore James in because of our ties with the trumpet collection. That we had. I'm sorry. No, they're down in Jersey with his daughter. Mm-hmm. It's the Hokum Boys. Joe Brown. Pinewood Tom, or a pseudonym, I guess. Joshua. No, I'm not. Exactly. That's why these are not even priority. I mean, it's on one level. It's like, yeah, this is great. This is cool stuff to have, but you know. They've all been, you know, re-released multiple times. We have several Robert Johnsons. And, yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, it's like, great, I've got several, you know, I've got four Robert Johnsons, but, it's believe me, it's cool to have. But, yeah.
For you, it's the artifact, not the music.
Right. Right. I mean, priority for me are these interview tapes, things of that nature. I mean, that has the research value. Yeah. Leroy Carr, Scrapper Blackmore. It's a ton of Lonnie Johnson in the collection. Mississippi Sheiks. Yeah, we have this bust in the archive of Sam Chapman's head that James' son Thomas created out of, he called it Mississippi Gumbo, but it was a clay out of Yazoo County. Very frightening head. I don't have a photo of it. Let me just end up by saying the Sheldon Harris collection has obviously been a wonderful addition to the Blues Archive at the University of Mississippi, but it is going to take some time to complete processing. It's simply rehousing materials. It takes quite a bit of time. At present, as far as the Blues Archive is concerned, it is moi. And I do have some, I have a couple of student workers. Not full-time student workers, but they do help. They're sort of very valuable service in rehousing and creating basic inventories that I flush out later. I actually plan to have basic inventories of the entire collection completed at the end of this year, and I'll have more detailed finding aids coming out later. Let's see. All of the books in the collection were actually our cataloging department. They're cataloging all of those, so that I do have help on that end. There, I'm getting help with that, and that will all be available through our online catalog. Let's see. I guess that is. Let me just throw this open to questions, either about this or the Blues Archive in general. Yes.
Are you presenting next year a progress update?
I could. Yes.
It
actually came into our possession. My predecessor at the Blues Archive, Ed Kamara, worked out the initial agreement with Sheldon. Sheldon was looking to initially to deposit it at Rutgers, since he has the tie-in with the Institute of Jazz Studies. But Rutgers did not make any. They said they wouldn't keep the collection intact as a separate unit. It was it might be sent out to other areas and broken up in different ways that he was not pleased with. So it came to us, and that creates some problems. I mean, because archives have their existing sort of structures and ways they organize things, and But I do have a lot of flexibility with it. But that's how it came to us.
Well,
we had a blues collection. I mean, that's what we specialize in is blues, and we were growing. We had a number of important other collections, and he felt it would be best served with us. Yes. Well, Arlington House no longer. It went to DeCapo, I think, after that in 80-something. Yeah, DeCapo Press took over after Arlington House. Arlington House just did the first one. I'm not sure with them. There has been some talk with some members of the estate and some others, but that's just. At this point, that's not happening. I mean, are you talking about something in the future, releasing all of that other information?
Well, yeah, that's part of it, but mm-hmm. I was also wondering what was the discussion back and forth.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they actually, believe it or not, he got received a lot of liberties to do what he wanted. They allowed him a lot of photos in the book, which he was shocked. He didn't think they would allow him as many photos as they did. They took a chance on it. They didn't really, you know, they knew that it wasn't going to be a major, you know, blockbuster seller, but they saw the value of the type of work he was doing and allowed him to put a lot more photos than some other people would have received.
We all bought it from
Scout's book. Right. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the other, like the, yeah, we had practically if you name it, like any blues CD you can think of. I mean, we have almost all anything you can think. I mean, there's obviously many many exceptions, but as far as the CD realm and LPs, we have quite a few, and it's all specifically blues, and you know, we have the entire document series, you know, for all its weaknesses, but you know, it's great historical document. The documents, it's all in the online catalog.
Okay.
All of that, yeah. You can access that through WorldCat. Even. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Right. At the present, you can't hear anything yet. There's no digitized audio. I have a lot of digitized audio that I have, you know, preservation copies, things of that nature, access copies. But none of it is currently on the web. I made the mistake early on when I got the job of speaking to our university attorneys, and they are very conservative at the University of Mississippi. And so they're not playing well. So with future collections, I'm just not going to talk to the attorneys anymore, and I'm just going to just do it. But I have a number of interviews from which collections? Oh, there's some interview tapes that my mind's just drawing a blank at the moment.
Yeah, digitalized radio,
yes. Oh, I know some that I have. The John R. collection, the famous Nashville DJ. We actually have audio tapes, air checks, and all that from his collection, and I do have limited permissions, but some of that up, some of his introductions to songs, things of that nature, I can put up. Yeah, exactly. So, and currently I just have, you know, all of our, I would say half of the CDs, a sixth of the LPs, probably less than that, 4,045s, several 78s, and those are the sound recordings that we have catalog, you know, full bibliographic records in our OPAC that you can search. Others we have finding aids, and for those, I have some inventories that I've just placed on, like our Living Blues collection of 78s. I have all of those in just static inventories that you can browse on the website, since we don't have them in the catalog, but I felt I needed to make them accessible somehow. And our systems people are not playing well with us putting up, you know, dynamic databases at this point, so I have some static pages of some inventories up. There's a lot more sheet music, actually. No, it's not up yet. But inventories and yeah. But that's my idea of whenever I came to the archive is I want to put up some things on the web. I want to have a web presence. I want people to access this information remotely. Not everyone has a chance to make it to Oxford, Mississippi to do research, so I want this out there so people can get to it. But, is
that it? Yeah, I think that we've come to the end of the 30 minutes here. We started a little late, just and we've had all kinds of technical difficulties, which we apologize for, but the content is great.
Thanks.
And this brings us to our final presentation for this afternoon's session.